Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Larry Barrett, who, with his wife Jamie, owns the unique catering establishment Simply Gourmet in Sarasota, Florida. But Larry is not simply a chef, a caterer, or a cook. He's a director, he's an actor, he's a producer, and he's continually coming up with inventive and creative ways to combine theater and food. Currently, he's producing an evening with the Fire Sign Theater, where they do a fully dramatized radio production of Nick Danger, Third Eye, and which he is accompanying with signature dinners from America's first fine dining restaurant. That would be the Delmonico. He's doing a dinner that you might have had in the Delmonico restaurant in 1920. Also, I'm playing a piece from one of Nick Danger's shows. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about knowing and being yourself. Not the self that you're presenting, which may or may not be your whole self. Not the self that you're thinking of yourself as or pretending to be, but the real thing, which, if you've listened to any of my shows, you know I believe very few of us are actually able to do. To make this point, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because you can hear in those interviews that these people are who they are behaving like, who they are being, at least in their work. Usually, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. But today's interview with Larry Barrett is with a man who is making his life with several arts, sometimes one at a time and sometimes in combination. Having fallen in love as a very young man with the whole idea of collaboration, of joining together with others to produce something which none of them that could produce on its own, having had this experience in choir at a very young age, Larry has figured out a way to collaborate all over the place. As a musical performer, as a writer, as an actor, as a director and a producer. Also teaching acting on the college level. And then indulging his passion to create food, to cater, to to invent these amazing special dinner parties, which he will tell you more about. And my interview today is going to focus a little bit on his current production, bringing together his passion for theater, and specifically Firesign Theater and their Nick Danger series, and a special dinner circa 1920 from Delmonico. And he'll tell you about not only his interest in Firesign Theater, but why he chose Delmonico and what is so special about the meal that he's serving. Also, following the interview, I'm playing a piece from an old show of Nick Danger. And between the interview, which is pretty long, and the Nick Danger piece, which is also pretty long, I don't have that much time. So that I don't forget, I'm going to give you my website now, thelynshow.com, thelynshow. Don't forget the E in Lynn, thelynshow.com. You can find out anything you want to know about me and my private practice and listen to all of the shows, any of the podcasts from the past. Also, you can download any of the podcasts from to iTunes and to everything else that it's possible to download to. Okay, so now, because I don't want to shortchange Larry's interview or the Nick Danger piece, here is Larry Barrett. So I'm here with Larry Barrett of Simply Gourmet in his shop, and I'm eating his brownies, I want to tell you. And they're wonderful.
Thanks.
I do this internet radio show, and for it, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have made your living and or your life with theater and are now making it with food. I only ask one question.
Okay.
If we were talking about your interest in theater, when was the very first time in your life that you thought, oh, acting, directing, story, something, when was it triggered? When did it begin?
You know what I remember exactly? It's crazy. I saw a lot of Broadway shows because I lived in New York, and my parents used to take me once in a while. I'd have to beg them. They weren't
really?
They weren't big showgoers.
So, no, wait a minute. So how did that get started if they were not big showgoers?
I don't know. I just all of a sudden started listening to musical theater and started enjoying that. Somehow it clicked in me.
How old were you?
About 13. And then by the time I got to be...
Wait. I'm really curious about this because usually kids who get interested in the theater, their parents have sort of motivated it, triggered it, something it.
Right.
So, were they doing plays in school? I mean,
we did quite a few plays. I guess the first thing that really got me excited was being in a choir and being part of 120 people actually singing four-part harmony.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're one of just many voices. And that, from there, I realized, although I didn't know what the word meant, but it's a collaboration. And almost every business that I pick up, that's the fun thing about it. And that's the challenging thing about it, too, that you're not dealing with inanimate objects. You're dealing with people all the time.
Yeah. I love this. And I'm really curious. Do you remember how old you were when you were in the chorus?
Yeah, but that was, I was 12 then.
12, okay,
12.
All right. And so this is real interesting to me, is I don't remember ever hearing anyone talk about it quite like this, although lots of people say, when I found the drama club, or when I found the choir, or when I found when I was in my first play,
right,
what I felt was this fellowship, this feeling of finding a home or finding a family. But I've never actually heard anybody say that they were struck by the collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that's real interesting to me.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing for me, that you're one of 120 voices that are mingling, and that was very exciting for me. That spurred me into listening to more musical theater. When I was, let's say, about 14 or 15, too, I started sneaking into the act twos of Broadway shows and standing in the standing room, because I got such a kick out of seeing the shows, but I couldn't afford them being so young, so I used to go do the second act, stand there, nobody ever bothered me, and it was fantastic.
Okay, now, I did that as well, by the way.
I bet you did.
I did. So, especially if I saw a show I really liked,
right.
I would go back. And,
oh, yes. You
know, so I don't know how many times I saw the second act of Company.
Mm-hmm. What a great show.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, fantastic.
So, when you say you listened to musical theater, where were you listening? Did you get records?
Yes. Back then it was vinyl. Listening to vinyl and listening to it over and over. Shows like Pippin were the shows that I was just thrilled by. Stephen Schwartz, and God, he's still got Wicked on Broadway, and he's going to, I'm sure he just keeps doing stuff. Sondheim was a favorite, of course. Somebody, you know, back then, compared to Oklahoma, the man was on the lunatic fringe, you know? Now he's mainstream.
That's
so
right.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And then one day, what really hit me, and I knew that it wasn't just a singing type of interest I had, was I went to see a production of Lenny, starring Cliff Gorman on Broadway.
God.
It was amazing. And that, my dad was like, God, the guy can really curse a lot, huh? You know? But I'm going, Dad, it's so deep. You know, back then I knew it.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, just brilliant. And then to see how it all ended for him, too, made it, it was a terrible life for him. But as far as the show went, it just pulled at your heartstrings.
Yes, it did.
It did. And right then and there, I knew that I had to do what Cliff Gorman was doing. And the great thing about it is I gave myself goals in life to do a couple of different shows. One of them was Lenny, and I ended up talking to Lenny Bruce's daughter, Kitty Bruce.
My goodness.
And got the rights to do his autobiography. Really, I got the rights to use the title, which is How to Talk Dirty and Influence People.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that show. I used whatever I could out of that book in terms of his material, and it was quite sizable. So I was able to mount a one-man Lenny Bruce show and tour colleges with it in upstate New York.
Wow.
And I put myself through college doing that. So it was the most unique job I ever found. It beat the heck out of tossing pizzas and making heroes.
And being a waiter.
Yeah. So I used to do that about twice a month, and all within the State University College system, because they all spoke to each other, so they'd pass the word on. I'd go to the student union, set up for 400 people, and it was really exciting.
And it was a perfect college show.
Perfect. There was a lot of people there, especially when it came to the way Lenny looked at race. Back then, even in the early 60s, he was a colorblind type person.
Right.
And the country just wasn't ready right then for him politically, his religious views. But to me, it was so exciting to hang it out on the line.
Did you get pushback?
Not from the colleges themselves, but the audience. There's a couple of areas where he starts doing racial slurs on stage. The reason he does the racial slurs and uses the N-word or calls Italians and Jews by various slurs is because he's just making the point that there's really, it's just a word. And the more you hear the word, the less you're going to be affected by it. Which is funny because now that's what you hear all the time.
This makes me think of the song from Avenue Q, Everyone's a Little Bit Racist.
Yes, 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 yes.
It's the same.
Yes.
It's the same.
Mm.
Theory,
yep.
But they softened it so much.
That's right. That's right. But that was my goal back then, was to mount that show, to get it going. Meeting Kitty Bruce was fantastic. Getting to learn a little bit about the history firsthand of her father, her mother, her grandmother, who really raised her. And then back around that same time, I started listening to the show I'm working on now, Nick Danger, Third Eye. So it was a long time ago.
You're kidding.
No.
How did that happen?
All of a sudden, we were just sitting around, started listening to Nick Danger, Third Eye, and I go, one day I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it as a radio show. I'm going to have live vintage music. The food didn't come in quite yet because although I was cooking at country clubs at the time, it wasn't my main focus, obviously.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave this,
okay.
But the question that I ask, of course, is how did the food thing get started? Where was
well,
that?
Well, the food thing, like almost everybody that's in the arts, you know, you have your great years and you have your off years. But my food passion, it is a passion, and it's the same strong passion as I have for the theater,
mm-hmm.
which it sometimes it gets a little confusing. So now it's great to be able to combine a little bit. But back when I was 18, and every time I came home from school for the summer or wherever I was for the summer, if I wasn't doing summer stock, I would be a chef. Or at that time, I don't want to overstep my bounds. I just say a cook.
Yeah, but where did you learn to cook? When did you discover that you like to cook? I mean,
okay, that's a long time back.
Well, I want to hear it because however much it's true that it's feast and famine in the arts,
right?
Most male actors have not taken to cooking.
Right.
So
it's
where
true.
Did this happen?
Well, you know what? My mom used to be a fairly decent cook.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden she just stopped cooking. She just started making like concoctions, you know? So I was like, this isn't me. I've got to start thinking about feeding myself a little bit more of things that I like to eat.
Like what?
Back then, potato pancakes, minestrone soup.
You're an eclectic guy.
Yeah, I am, and that's the way my business still is now. Mm-hmm. I always say our food is ethnic cuisine with a classical flair. One of my grandmothers was a fantastic cook.
What's your background?
She's Polish, and her husband was Russian, so some Slavic foods, real comfort food, mm-hmm. real comfort food. She was the greatest cook, and my other grandmother was not. In fact, my other grandmother had a way to fix things when she ruined them. She goes, oh, God, there's so much pepper in this soup, I ruined it. And then she would think about it. She'd call a friend, and her friend says, put a couple of potatoes in
it.
You know what I mean? Right. So she had a million different ways to fix things that she ruined. But my other grandmother, really, I got to see her bake a lot. She's had some really fantastic products that she made, honey cakes, sponge cakes, rugala, all these kinds of things. And I do them now the same way the same way she did, adding
okay,
the same ingredients.
I didn't want to stop you, but that,
sure.
So essentially what I hear you saying is that you were someone who really liked to eat.
Oh, yes.
You know, that you really liked, that food had meaning for you, that,
yes.
you know, right? And so then when your mother stopped making the stuff that you like to eat, you
right.
decided you would?
That's right.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I just jumped in and started, I'd make an omelet one day. Then I'd go, hey, what would happen if I took an egg beater and I beat these eggs up until they foamed a little bit and made an omelet out of them?
Mm.
And then I go, well, it's good, but I can't flip it over because it's so thick and foamy. So then I would go, what if I put it under the broiler in the oven? You know what I mean? So I'll tell you the truth. When it comes to the cooking and what I do now, I never went to culinary school. But what I tell people is I learned on the job. I used to work 3 months every year at the country clubs. And it was always a catering. It was always catering. Catering's always been my passion. I don't know why, but I like cooking for large numbers of people. I guess it sort of goes with that performance because 150 people are eating your food instead of one table at a time.
Yes.
And besides it helping in terms of food costs and everything, it became my passion too. To see that much food going out, it was like doing a production. But instead of props, you used food. Instead of actors, you had waitresses and waiters.
Well, and unless I'm very mistaken, it's another collaboration.
Exactly.
You can't do this one on your own.
Nope. Now I take care of the kitchen. Somebody takes care of the front. So I always look at myself like I'm the director. They're the producer. And it's really a very similar.
Yeah, it's the food of the actors.
It's very, very close. I know. It's crazy.
Oh, no, it's not. It's perfect, actually. Mm-hmm. What they have in common is this idea that it's a collaborative I don't know how to say this, that it requires a collaboration in order to produce the product.
Right, it's a team.
It's a team. That's
really
exactly
is.
Right. It's a team. That's right. And I'm telling you, that's right. Of course, you know it. right. And then the team produces something for a number of people.
That's right.
And these things are, and the other thing that it has in common, which I think I was thinking about when you were talking about how you would develop the omelet,
mm-hmm.
is the creative requirement. All these things require that you invent stuff.
It does. They do. They
yes.
do. They do. The acting, you're inventing things out of thin air.
Well, and producing,
right.
and directing,
right.
and cooking, and I mean, it's all
yeah.
about putting together elements that didn't used to be together.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. It's very exciting. And being able to combine the two, like with the Nick Danger project, to actually combine it with the Delmonico's dinner, I just love.
Okay, hold on.
Yep.
As long as we've gotten there.
Sure.
Describe let's go back to the place where you
sure.
said, one of these days I'm going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Right, okay. And so now, how many years later?
Oh my God, it's over 30 years later.
Over 30 years later, you are actually doing it.
Right.
And so describe it in as much detail as you can.
Great. What the evening's going to be
yes.
like? Oh, great. People are going to walk into the Crosley Estate, which is fantastic because Pal Crosley was instrumental in bringing radio to the United States at an affordable price. And that's when it hit me where to do it. I said, oh, my God, I read this little passage off the wall up there. And I was like, this is the place to do a dramatized radio show. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what could I pair it up with? Because the food and the theater now has to be, they have to be combined for me. So I really got a charge out of that. And then I started thinking about Delmonico's restaurant. It was the first fine dining restaurant in America, the first restaurant to use tablecloths, the first to have a printed menu. Before that, almost all restaurants were diners. And
didn't know this.
Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. They invented the term 86th, which if anybody's ever worked in the restaurant business, 50% of us know what 86th is. Mm-hmm. The reason it's called 86th is because Delmonico's steak was number 86 on their menu. And that was the first thing that ran out every night. So they'd cross it off.
And it was 86?
And it was 86. So that became 86. They invented Oysters Rockefeller, Chicken a la King, which it used to be, now it's called Chicken a la King.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like telephone. After a couple of years,
you don't hear it.
So they changed it to Chicken a la King. And I'm serving for that evening a chicken Wenberg. It was named after a man named Wenberg, and he came back and he did a lobster Wenberg. He told the chef about it. He just got back from France and goes, man, you've got to check this out. And he went back there, he cooked it for the chef, and it was a beautiful, actually a Newberg. Mm-hmm. So it was a seafood Newberg, a lobster Newberg with that egg liaison and flamed cognac and a little sherry. It was, you know, fantastic. Well, a couple of years later, the owner of Delmonico's and Wenberg had a falling out. So the guy Wenberg told him to told Wenberg to get lost. He changed a few letters and made it Newberg. So that was it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So there's all sorts of crazy history and fun stuff that titillated me just because of that. So we're going to be serving a beautiful dinner, more from the 1920s. Even though the play is from the 1940s, I'm sort of taking the liberty to mix a couple of genres around, have a little bit of fun. But we'll be doing a warm vichyssoise, and I make my own truffle oil out of black truffle trimmings. So I'll be drizzling a drop of that in there, and of course the famous chicken Wenberg, which is almost basically a deconstructed chicken pot pie, which everybody loves, with some beautiful steamed vegetables underneath it, some sliced poached chicken, and then I make the Newberg sauce out of the poaching liquid from the chicken, and a little cream. A little cognac, a little sherry, I'm in business, a little gold and red Roma tomato relish on the side for color and a little bit of acidity to cut through the richness and a beautiful potatoes Delmonico, a stack. And it's going to be fantastic. Then we'll also have an apple crisp for dessert with chantilly cream around it. Mm. We're going to serve some coffee. While people are eating, though, upstairs, they'll be eating upstairs, not where the show's going. The show's going to be downstairs in the foyer in the main room. So upstairs, they'll be overlooking the bay, which is going to be fantastic. And also, it's the living quarters. I call it the exclusive area. Very few people get to see it, maybe except during a tour, but it's going to be very exciting for those folks. And there's going to be live piano music piped up from downstairs playing through old-fashioned radios in each room. And so we have a live pianist. Then after dinner, everybody goes downstairs. Theater seating, open theater seating. Everybody takes their
seat. Is there a theater? I mean, is there a stage?
We're actually building one. Yeah, we're building a stage to do this. The stage will be 8 by 16 with two side platforms off to the side, one for the sound effects person and one for the organist, which is going to be just great. So everybody comes downstairs. We're going to be having live vintage music. I got a fantastic pianist, a man named Robbie Rose, and a great singer, Joel Davis, who does a bit of burlesque in town. So I think it's going to be really exciting. We got some sultry tunes. We're going to even have the man who's playing Nick Danger sing Honey Pie by the Beatles. Should be fantastic. And then we get into our show. And the great thing about the show, which is a lot of fun, is it's not just a radio reproduction, because there's nothing worse than having two microphones separate the actors from the audience. So really what we've done is we have a play within a play. So not only is one guy playing Nick Danger, but he's playing an actor who's playing Nick Danger, and his name there would be John Donahoe. Well, and the whole cast and crew of this show are a bunch of miscreants. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Nobody, there's one guy that doesn't want them to get through this. And
mm-hmm.
every show, he messes around and messes people up on mm-hmm. purpose. Nick Danger has a crush on the woman who he's playing opposite, Nancy. She can't stand him. So, you know, there's all sorts of interesting things that parallel what's going on in the radio show as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been very exciting, and I've had quite a few ideas, and they've all ended up on the boards, they've all ended up on TV, so my wife said, Larry, if this one gets done and you don't do it, you're going to be kicking yourself all night long again.
Yes.
I've come up with a lot of different concepts, especially cooking shows. Food 911, I called it Culinary Emergency, but I sent that into the Food Channel, and within 6 months, that was on the air. So, you know, I couldn't really prove anything, but
right.
but they're ideas that float around my head. I write them down, and I try to do something with them. You know, it'd be nice to be able to earn a living doing some of those, but...
It's the same thing that I was talking about before, mm-hmm. is that you're a sort of creativity machine.
There's no shortage of ideas in my brain.
No, and you keep putting together things which were previously not together. It's the same
right.
thing over and over again.
That's right.
And it doesn't actually matter what genre you're in.
No.
Right? Because you approach it all the same.
No, I do. You know, I'm very meticulous about what I do. I'm a real detail person. It works out real well, though, to come up with these ideas, let them fester a little bit. Dude, the fun part of it is, if you could believe it, is doing the research. 3 years back, I started doing presidential dinners. Now it's a big seller for us. I do the John F. Kennedy dinner that he served to Princess Grace in 61, and I do the Ronald Reagan dinner that he served to Gorbachev. I believe it was in 84.
My goodness.
So it's a lot of fun to do. I play the music that they played at the White House. It really is fantastic. The tables are set exactly the same way. The food is not a real, it's a reproduction of the dish,
mm-hmm.
but updated just a drop.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always been very exciting, and it's an election year, so I'm rolling it out again. after this is over, I can't wait to get back to doing those presidential dinners.
So you're going to do Obama's beer with them?
That's it. You know, Obama's got, there are several presidents that just love food.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of them. And mm-hmm. to have Rick Bayless, a great Mexican chef from Chicago, come in and prepare the food for the Mexican president was just like a work of genius, I thought. And he made a beautiful mole sauce. It took him, you know, like 26 hours to make.
My God.
Clintons were another one.
I was going to say, one
yes.
of the Clintons.
Clintons were, they made the most changes since the Kennedys.
Terms of food?
In terms of food and the way state dinners are run.
Really?
Yeah. The state dinners before the Kennedys, everybody sat at long, square tables, rectangular.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody could chat with each
right,
other.
Right.
You know? And Jacqueline Kennedy said, husbands and wives can't sit together anymore. And she sat them all at round tables so everybody could converse.
Right.
She hired a French chef. and Rene Verdon, and you know, everybody just loved the food. But then when the Clintons got into office, their first state dinner, they go around, they still never plated the food up. They used to go around from table to table and serve everything French style with
right.
a spoon and a fork.
Right.
One day, they dropped a piece of chicken on the floor, and Hillary Clinton said, uh-oh, what is going on?
Right.
Why are we doing this? Why don't we just plate the food up? Because now that's what people do in restaurants.
Right.
It wasn't like that before.
Right.
But now, it's having the plate brought to you with everything mingled on top of each other in a little bit of a tower with a drizzle around it.
Looking the way you want it to look.
Right. Fantastico,
right.
you know?
Right, right, right.
And so she came up with that. And then her chef started doing that. And they brought their own chef with them, too.
Yeah.
And that was, all exciting stuff. And my point is, I love the research.
So talk just a little bit about the teas, because as long as we're doing this,
sure.
let's make a plug for the teas.
Sure. The teas also was one of those things, all of a sudden about, well, you know when it was? It was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And the stocks plummeted. Everybody was, everybody go, oh, what are we going to do? I can't really afford a big party.
Right.
So, well, do some teas.
Right.
You know, and people started calling up about teas. And all of a sudden, it was like, really, three people called up in 1 week. And I was like, something's going on right now with these teas. I started piling through and doing some research.
Mm-hmm.
Found out that the Queen, the royal family, actually, three or four times a year, they invite 8,000 people to Buckingham Palace and serve them tea.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, from all strata of life. And we used to do that at the White House, too, back all the way back in Dolly Parton's time. Dolly Parton. I mean, Dolly Madison. I love it. I love it. History would have been a lot different if Dolly Parton was James Madison's wife, I think.
Right.
But it was very interesting. They invite all these people. I started looking at the menus they have, how they put it together as well, and was very, very excited by it. So I started looking around, got as many of the menus as I possibly could from what they do. Then I gave it my own spin.
I didn't know there was much variety. I thought it's tea, scones,
right?
You know, lemon curd,
mm-hmm.
the cream thing,
right? Little Devonshire cream,
Devonshire cream, some sandwiches.
Yep. Well, we stopped doing, you know what, last time we brought sandwiches back now, because people were crying for them, but we did an Alsatian tart, we've done Tuscan bruschetta. Mm-hmm. I serve everything with a Ceylon tea, so of course being a chef, I go, how can I make that work? The Ceylon tea is sort of like
English
an English breakfast.
Oh.
It's sort of like an English breakfast where it's got a little bit of that zip to it
that
helps cut through the fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important when you're serving cream, because cream will coat your tongue, you can't really taste much after that.
Oh.
But we started doing miniature little strawberry parfaits with tiny spoons, the brownie triangles, little almond cookies, just a little fruit tarts, things that are the same but different.
Again, with the creative thing.
Yeah, I just love it.
It wasn't there before, but now it is, right?
Yeah, I loved it. We started playing some great music in the hallway at Watts Through. Once again, everybody's overlooking the bay in the upstairs, exclusive upstairs area, and I just love it. The tea's fantastic. You know, we just love the tea. The great thing about it was my wife and I were talking, and she mentioned, you know what, the rentals will be this much for it. And I go, oh, rentals? You mean going to rent teacups to do this? And she goes, yeah, well, what if 100 people show up? I go, if 100 people show up, then I think we should have real teacups. You know what? We did 8 teas, and over 650 people showed up. After the first week, it was packed. That was so great. But the exciting thing about it was just being able to translate what was done again, learn so much about it, perfect some of the recipes.
Make it your own.
Yes, and then we went out, back to the other story, we went out to a couple of consignment shops in Bradenton and bought tea service for 100 people. It cost me less than $200 to buy all those teapots, the teacups, platters, old cake platters. So this way everybody has a different teacup. Different teapot.
I love this.
Different spoons, different forks. You know, it was just
fantastic.
I love
this.
And it was so much fun. And now I drink every day about 4 o'clock. I just go, tea time. I'm taking 10 minutes to myself and I'm pouring myself a cup of tea. And it was a lot of fun just going shopping for that stuff. And it's amazing what you can find out there. And right now that really is what's going on in the culinary world. There's a chef, God, I forgot his name. He has a restaurant called Next, I believe, in Chicago. And every 3 months, he changes the whole look of his restaurant and what he's serving. And he brings you back in time. When he opened the restaurant for the first 3 months, he served bistro cooking from France from the 1920s. Now, I believe he's doing Thai food from the early, like 1800s, so, you know, unadulterated time. I mean, it's crazy,
right?
But that's what he's doing,
right?
It's the hottest thing. They just had some screenwriters option his story. He has a very interesting story, although I can't remember his name. I've got to write it down because it's fascinating. He ended up a couple of years back being diagnosed with tongue cancer.
Yeah,
you talk about an irony.
Yeah.
You know, a chef with tongue cancer, you know, but they said his tongue was going to go. And he said, absolutely not. I'd rather die. And they gave him chemotherapy, and he's fine now. He's 100% cured. It's a miracle, they said. And now he's doing, it's what he's doing, although he won't admit it, he's combining food and theater.
Right.
It's really environmental theater from the 60s.
Yes.
The performance art,
in a way.
It's performance art, you know?
Yes, it is. And and in its way, it's all the same thing. For you, the impulse is the same thing.
Yes.
To create these productions.
Yes. Nothing gives me greater satisfaction than thinking about something, coming up with the idea, laughing about it, and then going to Amazon.com and buying every book they've got on it, reading it, seeing if it fits into the Simply Gourmet concept and my concept, and then watching it come to life. There's something about taking nothing and making something.
Yeah, well, and That is so wonderful, and I think it's so perfect. I mean, I think it so perfectly describes you and your process.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I always ask. I think actually we've talked about this, so there may not be anything more to say about it. Having spent a lifetime, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I said I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Right.
But usually these are people who make their living or their life with an art.
Gotcha.
They're dancers, they're writers, they're actors,
right.
They're whatever, you know. But you seem to make your living and your life with the art of combining, with the art of creating, with the skills that you have to make something that wasn't there before.
Yep.
So I always ask, if you look back on a life that's about that,
right.
Is there anything that you would want to say about what it's like to have lived a life that is about creating something that wasn't there before and the collaboration that it takes to make it happen?
You know, I guess the most exciting thing about it and what occurs to me the most is dealing with people. It's the hardest thing about the collaborative process, to be able to use, you have to leave yourself open enough too. It's a fine balance between knowing what you want and leaving yourself open to the ideas.
This is what directors say, you know.
That's exactly. That's what every good director
is able to do, that balance.
Exactly. And a chef. Because a chef always has to keep himself open to trends or start the trend. You know, so the two are very similar in that way. You know, if you're the kind of director, and I've got several of them that I work with, that when they say, I have an idea, and they say, no, and they move on.
Right.
To me, the worst director to work with. And I try to carry that through to my cooking too. If my sous chef says, I think I've got a better idea for this, what kind of an idiot would say, I'm not interested in ideas?
Right.
That's my thing too. And that's why the secret of my happiness and success with doing what I do is the research and leaving myself open to see what other people want out of my cooking or out of a production. And you have to appease them too. Because, you know, for right now I'm a caterer, so I cater to people and their whims and what they want. And I think that's very important, to leave yourself open. I've had several clients, which is interesting. At first, when I first started doing this in my 30s as a full-time business and called myself at that stage a chef, it was amazing how many people would come in with, hey, my grandmother used to make this, and I'd love you to make it. Here's the recipe. And then I'd roll my eyes and cuss under my breath. And then, you know what? After the first time I did it, they had the bomb of a recipe. It was great, and it's on my menu still. I had a woman from Vietnam come in who could barely speak English. She goes, these are the cakes, the rice cakes from my village that my grandmother and mother still make, and I make them for my children, and I must have them at my wedding. And they're little, a jasmine rice cake with pork in them, dipped in rice flour and fried. And of course, you know, I rolled my eyes again. They're on my menu now still, and they're one of my favorite things to eat. So you've got to leave yourself open. I mean, some people come up with knucklehead ideas that you can't really execute, but you know, you've got to leave your mind open because there's always interesting ideas floating around. One chef who I admire, who's a real, out of everybody, the man's an artist, but he's a machine when it comes to creating items and food products that are for sale. David Burke in New York, he invented salmon pastrami. And this whole, and I make it all the time. I don't really serve it to too many people in town, but I make it for myself because it's just so delicious. But what he did was he came up with the cake pop. But the cheesecake lollipop.
Right.
That was, no matter how many places you see around the country now, that came out of his brain.
Wow.
And I was one of the first people to eat it in New York City at his Place Fish. And I got to tell you, fantastic. Fantastic. But he has the knack for coming up with these products.
Right.
He has a spray now, zero calories, chocolate spray. He's got 35 different flavors. And you spray it on stuff, zero calories, and it's the exact flavor of what it's supposed to be. Mint. Chocolate mint, ancho chili. So he's got all these products, and I wouldn't say he's my hero, but I try to look and see what people like that are doing. and take it from there, you know, because they're the people that are moving us forward.
Yeah.
Always. And they're setting the trends. And that's what I'm all about. I try to keep going. Soup sippers, we've got them. little miniature petite parfaits, they're on the menu. But then I have to go, what can I do for myself that is my own unique thing? And I've got several of those too.
Not to mention Nick Danger.
Yes. This Nick Danger thing to me is great because it gets us out into the community, mm-hmm. and it lets people see both sides of what we do, that we can mount the production with a bit of finesse, and we could also come through with the most delicious food that can be prepared.
Yeah, and it seems to me that what you're saying over and over again, the theme is creativity and collaboration.
Yes, always.
Over and over again.
Well, I'm in business with my wife, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of collaboration there.
I'll
sometimes
bet.
Maybe a little too much, you know, because it gets, you know, it's hard to be married to someone and then you go home and instead of going, honey, what'd you do today?
Right,
it's like,
right.
We're still chatting about some of this stuff until one of us like rings the bell and goes, no more. We need our brains to relax for a while. And you have to. But, you know, every now and then I'll just go, ding, 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 ding. I've got an idea. I've got to talk to you about it. And she goes, you know what?
Write it down. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Leave a note on your iPhone, please. We're done for the night. And you know what? That's in itself. She's a genius with that. She knows how to live life to the fullest in terms of enjoying herself and keeping her mind open. When you put your mind to thinking about things hard, then you relax about it. What pops into your head?
But again, that's a skill. Not everybody has that.
It's true.
You know, I mean, a lot of people could think very hard and then relax and not and nothing
that's
would
happen. That's very true.
You know.
That's very true. Usually my process is I'll always work on, first I think. Mm-hmm. First I think, then I write. Sloppy. Handwriting. I can't do it on the computer first. Then a couple of days later I go back to it after I've done even more research. Then I sit down, do some more writing. And then I just keep getting, until I get about 50, 60 different thoughts together that I could start piecing together. And that's how it works for me.
Well, it's interesting. What's interesting to me about it is that you have discovered the process that works for you.
Yes. And you know what? I got a master's degree in acting, and I was an instructor at the University of Illinois for 2 years.
When you were teaching acting?
Yes, I taught acting and dialects for acting majors. At the same time, I was doing shows and directing and getting a master's degree. But the one thing I learned from college, it's not the facts that are important. I always tell everybody this. It teaches you how to learn.
Right.
And that's the important thing, how to organize your brain, how to make sure that you're covering all your bases. That was the important thing for me, how to mount a show. It was just like learning on the job, the same thing with cooking. They're both very similar that way.
Yeah, and but again, that's your process.
Yes.
That is how you do it.
That's right.
You immerse in it.
Yes.
And then you learn it, and then you can do it.
That's right. And I find when I do that, too, it takes my mind off of all the other silly nonsense of life, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And focuses you on something that's positive, that's moving forward, and that could be a great success.
Yes.
That's the hope.
And that's a creative output.
Yes, it is. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, well, and so do the rest of us, apparently.
Good, thanks, yeah. There's very few people that don't like food, huh?
No, or theater.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
This is great. Thank you so much, Larry.
That's great.
Over and over about the ability to discover the parts of yourself for which you may now be in denial. Larry Barrett is a man who is open to everything that there is in him. He is intrigued, and then he dives in and finds a way to access his interest, his skill, his capacity, in all of these diverse ways. He's the poster child for the Lynn Show. And I'm very glad to have been able to hear this story and to pass it on to you. And I'm hoping that it has stimulated you to think that whatever it is you're doing, it doesn't have to be the only thing you do. So, as I have said, I want to play this piece from one of the old Nick Danger shows, so that if you are near Sarasota, or you can come to Sarasota for any of the Wednesdays and Thursdays in February, that you want to sign up for Larry's production. And let me give you the number. We didn't give you the number. But for the dinner and the show, 941-225-9122. So now I'm going to play you this piece from Nick Danger.
But, oh, gentlemen, gentlemen, I've just got the cue. We're about to go on the air. Stand by, stand by.
All right, here we go.
Music.
All right, here we go.
Ready?
Get ready.
Okay, and it's cue music. Los Angeles, he walks again by night.
I gotta get a car.
Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly, ruthlessly.
I wonder where Ruth is.
Doggedly.
I like dogs.
Hey, stop worrying my wingtips, little buddy.
Toward his weekly meeting with the unknown. At Rolling and Blackout, he turns left.
Hey, you ain't had your jerk. Watch out!
At Sprawl and Corruption, he turns right. He passes the rain-soaked cakes in MacArthur Park.
And we'll never have that recipe again.
I love that song.
Well, come on.
And he walks into a great deconstructed architectural makeover.
Oh, my nose. Gee. Frank Gehry has ruined my building.
He opens the door and steps inside. And he climbs the 13 steps to his office. He walks in. He's ready for mystery. He's ready for excitement. He's ready for anything because he's...
Nick Danger, Third Eye.
I want to order a pizza to go and no anchovies.
No anchovies? You've got the wrong man. I spell my name Danger.
What?
The makers of fantastic cigarettes. Long in the leaf, yet somehow short in the can. And U.S. Plus. We own the idea you thought was yours. Bring you another true story from the tattered casebook of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Let's join Nick now in the adventure we call Cut 'Em Off at the Pass. And good luck.
Don't worry. It all began innocently enough on Tuesday. I was sitting in my office that drizzly afternoon, listening to the monotonous staccato of rain on my desktop. I enjoyed reading my name on the glass of my office door. Regnad Kassin. My secretary lay snoring on the floor.
Oh, Nikki's so big and red.
Her long, beautiful gams were pinioned under the couch.
Oh, Nikki, where did it go? It's so small. Must
have been quite a weekend, especially for the couch. I didn't hear him enter, but my nostrils flared at the smell of his perfume. Pyramid patchouli, I think they called it. There was only one joker in Los Angeles grungy enough to wear that skint. And I had to find out who he was.
Good afternoon, Mr. Regnad. Yeah. My name is Rocky Rococo. It is the same, backwards or forwards.
You're kidding.
Rococo, 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 Rococo,
Thanks, Half Pint. You just saved me months of investigative work.
Maybe yes. Maybe no. Do you know what this is?
I had to think for a minute. What cruel game was he playing? That's a brown paper bag.
Say Vray.
Vray.
Got you. Now, Mr. Danger, look inside. What do you see?
That's a... potentially a Cuban pickle.
Very good.
They are good. Yes. Expensive, too.
Yes. Now I think you're ready for this.
Why, that's nothing but a two-bit ring from a Crackerback Jocks.
It says what it says.
Must be Canadian.
I'll sell it to you for $5,000.
What kind of a chump do you take me for?
First class.
There's an echo in here.
Echo in here.
That tarnished piece of tin is worthless.
Oh.
Worthless?
Worthless.
Not to Melanie Haber.
Melanie Haber?
You may remember her as Audrey Farber.
Audrey Farber.
Susan Underhill?
Susan Underhill?
How about Betty Jo Bielowski?
Betty Jo Bielowski. I hadn't heard that name since college. I didn't even go to college. Then it all came rushing back at me like the hot kiss at the end of a wet fist. It was a kind of a flashback, see? We had escaped from the crowd, Nancy and I, and we crouched, trembling, under the dwarf maples.
Oh, Nicky! I don't know what to say. This is the most beautiful ring I've ever seen. Where do I wear it?
Gee. Gee whiz, Nancy.
I wear it on my whiz.
I don't care where you wear it. I just paid for it. And it cost me $5,000.
Oh, Nicky, how can I ever repay you?
Oh, Nancy, how about you? 500 down and a 36-month contract.
What?
Or you could marry me.
I can't marry you, Nick. That's impossible. I can't even tell you why.
Why not?
There are no lines,
you see. They've gone to Canada.
Maybe someday after the strike.
Don't worry. All right, Nancy, I understand. Oh, just it. Sign here.
Oh.
And here.
Oh, Nick, you're killing me.
And here.
No, Nicky.
Just initial that.
No.
Add a zero to that figure, would you? Initial it.
Oh, Nicky, 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 you're such a zero. I'll never forgive you for this.
I'll never forget you neither, Nancy. And that's why I called you today, Nancy. I mean, Mrs. Haber. She reminded me of that time so long ago under the dwarf maples.
Well, I don't know what...
Excuse me, there's a terrible problem with the phone lines up here in Santa Barbara, Nicky, Nicky, Nicky. I don't know what prompted you to get in touch with me, but you've called just in the Nicky, Nicky, Nicky of time.
I see you haven't lost your delicate sense of humor, have you, Nancy?
What? Nick, Nick, I can't talk to you right now. I can hardly talk to myself. Listen, you've got to get out here right away. My husband, well, it's the same old place, you know, Santa Barbara. Hurry, Nicky, I need you.
Nancy, I slipped the ring into my nose and the receiver into my pocket and headed down the hall.
What?
Down the hall. Down the long, echoing hall. Toward the fire escape. I hadn't a moment to lose.
Hey, Dinger! Where's the fire?
In your eyes, Lieutenant Bradshaw.
Shut up! Don't get wise with me, Peeper.
Bradshaw, speaking of wisdom.
Yeah?
You're smoking a pickle.
Yes. It's a Don Gherkin.
Don Gherkin, 13-game winner with the Dodgers, 53.
Shut up! You're lucky we didn't burn you on the Anselmo Pederazzi case.
You backed into that one, Al.
Yes, I did.
You caught him, didn't you?
Yeah, we all caught him.
And we all got cured, no thanks to you.
What brings your flat feet sniffing around here?
Just a little piece of advice, Dinger.
Yeah, what?
Don't go sticking your pickle into police business.
Sure, Lieutenant, is that all?
Yeah, don't go tracking mud across my nice, clean kitchen floor.
Okay, Mom.
And don't use your cell phone during peak hours.
Gee, you can have a phone in your cell?
We'll be right back to the adventures of Nick Danger after this important message.
Well, of course, they won't be right back, but you can get more of Nick Danger by showing up on some Wednesday or Thursday in February at the Crosley, and not only hearing Nick Danger live and seeing these guys on stage, but eating a delicious gourmet classic Delmonico meal provided by Simply Gourmet. So, and let me do as I always do, thank Josh Hackney, who ran over here today and downloaded the piece of Nick Danger, which you just heard, and who does whatever it is that I need when it has anything to do with recording, electronics, computer. He built this computer. Now he has to teach me how to use it. So if you need anything that has anything to do with any of these things, then you want Josh Hackney, and you can get him and also me and all of my podcasts and anything you want to know about me by going up on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow.com. And if you use any of the social media, if you Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn and you like anything you've heard in The Lynn Show, please mention it. And you can, as I said earlier, you can download onto iTunes. You can download from iTunes, and if you download something from iTunes and you liked it, please make a review for us. So, as always, I hope that you heard something that you can use in today's show. The whole idea of being so many diverse things, the theme of which seems to be either creativity or collaboration. And of course, when creativity or collaboration is what you're looking for, there are so many places you can find it. So what is it that you are turned on by? Is it collaboration or creativity, or is it solitude and creativity? Or is it learning something and then doing it over and over? Well, whatever it is that you are, I am hoping that this show and all of my shows motivates you to discover it and to embrace it and to be it. So I hope that this show gave you something that that you value, something that will bring you back, because of course next week I will be here, same time, same station, and as always I certainly hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with Well, I don't give a dang, no, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang, rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle.